You're Sir Ulrich von Liechtenstein.
Yes.
You're my favourite knight. When we joust, I always say I'm you. What are you doing here in Cheapside? There's no parade today.
You keep a secret.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory. My name is Eric, and this is episode number, I want to say six, of our brand new podcast. Let me go ahead and introduce the panel. I got Rich with me today.
Hey.
And I got Jason.
Hello.
Vanessa.
Hello.
And the kid.
Hello, party people.
I screwed up the order that time, didn't I?
You did. I was surprised.
This is going to be a fun episode because there's going to be definite camps on this one. We are talking about A Knight's Tale, released May 11th, 2001, went to number two in the box office that weekend because The Mummy Returns was on its second week in the theaters, and it went to 16.5 million compared to the 33 million that The Mummy Returns brought in that week. Rated PG-13, runtime of 2 hours and 12 minutes. After his master dies, a peasant squire, fueled by his desire for food and glory, creates a new identity for himself as a knight.
Ah, yes, food and glory.
Written and directed by Brian Helgeland, who brought us Payback in 1999, just a couple years before this, and The Order a couple years after this, which also had Heath Ledger and I think Shannon Sussman in as well, and was also the one who wrote like The Postman, which is one of my favorite post-apocalyptic digs. And he wrote L.A. Confidential, was a pretty big hit as well. But
never seen either one of them.
I had never seen any of that.
L.A. Confidential is a good flick.
Heath Ledger. This was just off of his kind of launching to stardom. 10 Things I Hate About You came out in 99. The Patriot came out in the year 2000, where he starred alongside Mel Gibson. And that's the flick where Brian Helgeland saw him and decided to invite him to come join him for A Knight's Tale. So I suppose that worked out for him. He was cast opposite Rufus Sewell as the primary antagonist. Where else have we seen this guy? I kept meaning to look it up. Lord Adhemar.
Oh,
I know I've seen him in other things.
From that thing.
He's that guy from that thing.
That's kind of what I was thinking. He was really good at being bad. I mean, he was.
If I remember right, the other things that I've seen him in, he's also been kind of a butt. Yeah. So.
Hired to be a prick, huh?
Yeah.
Are you guys scrounging for IMDb?
Is he the Illusionist?
The Illusionist, that's the one that I was thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that is the thing.
I don't remember him from that. I don't remember that movie real well, though. It's been a while.
Super good, and I would recommend it to anybody, but that's beyond the point.
Yeah. I remember enjoying it, but I think I watched it pretty late at night when I watched it, and so it didn't stick with me real well, just because I was like really tired, but I remember the impression was that I enjoyed it.
The ending is really cerebral, so if you're watching it late at night, if you're like tired or anything, you're not going to get it or remember it.
Probably
most
true.
Recently is Man in the High Castle,
which is
I've never watched.
A critical darling. Yeah, it's people really love it. It's an Amazon original series, which ironically was one of the first Amazon original series that they really started promoting, and they did not have a reputation in those early days of doing that, of creating great content. You know, now they've done a lot better. They've got a lot of shows that people really like now. At the time, Man in the High Castle is about the only one. Of course, they were going up against the juggernaut of Netflix Studios, which was just pumping out amazing show after amazing show. So, I mean, what can you do? But yeah, Shannon Sossaman, also somebody with very little else on her resume. Very unique looking lady. Thought she was fine in this, you know. The role that was required of her. Paul Bettany, who is freaking amazing.
Yes.
Was freaking amazing in this. Was probably the best thing in this. And
who?
Paul Bettany. He played Chaucer.
Chaucer.
Ah, the naked man.
A couple of times even.
He was a vision of nakedness.
A vision. Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. Which, I mean, we've seen him in a ton of stuff now, but at the time, this was also one of his big, his first big films. So he hadn't done much before this either. Alan Tudyk, of course, whom every geek knows. Well, even if you aren't a Firefly fan, you know who he is.
Double take and then had to look up to be sure I wasn't crazy.
And then there's Watts versus Wash in Firefly. It took me a long time to...
Wash.
So yeah, that's the primary cast. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty other to talk about, but like I said, this is going to be a kind of a divisive conversation, I have a feeling. And I think I know about where people are going to fall. I mean, I'm not real clear on a couple people. Jason has made a couple of us extremely overt. I said not really clear. I've kind of got an idea. Kind of don't nitpick my words. Wait for the movie to nitpick stuff. yeah, anyway, I guess we'll get on with it. Okay, I freaking love this movie. Now, that out of the way, I have always loved this movie. And there have always been extremely obvious complaints, especially one really big one that when people bring up is hard to say, eh, you're not wrong, you know? So it has to be a mechanism that you have to want to explore. If you really don't like that, you're just going to not like the movie, plain and simple. But I've always felt that A Knight's Tale was a fun, fabulous adventure. It's got really compelling characters in it, and the relationship is really fun to explore as it develops. I enjoy this movie. I enjoy the story mechanism in it, which, you guys got to sit through this for a minute. I enjoy the story mechanism in it, which when people talk about how much the anachronism bothers them, I mean, my wife is one of those too. She just had a hard time getting past that. I get it. Anachronism is not something I feel believes in authentic representation of any story of the times. But this is a story being told. It's through a lens. It's a narration construct is what it is. It's a narrative construct, like Grandpa sitting down and reading the story in The Princess Bride. It's that sort of thing. We are viewing this story through the artistic auspice of the person who put it out there and tried to make it communicate with the audience.
Are you preemptively defending the movie before we can even start complaining about it?
I'm not going to get a chance to get a word in edgewise. Give me a break.
Oh, give us some credit.
Everybody's going to have strong opinions about this film, and I think everybody should. I believe that it is polarizing for a reason. But in truth, I don't feel that it is indefensible in saying that the movie is intended to be, and in my opinion, accomplishes being a fun story. So that is told in a fun way. So there's that. Now, the fact that 3 minutes into the movie, you get the entire crowd at a joust singing We Will Rock You does kind of mess with the sense of suspension of disbelief just a tad. But there you go. Let's talk about A Knight's Tale. By the way, box office figures, if anybody's curious, it was budgeted at $65 million. Most of this was actually filmed overseas. They were, I want to say, in... God, it's escaping me now.
Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. And there hadn't been a lot of other films that had been filmed in that area at the time. It was one of the early ones to get access to that area. So there was a lot of new scenery that hadn't been seen in a bunch of films. One of the interesting things is that a lot of the extras were not English speaking people. There's a great scene. I can't remember if I capped or not. I meant to, but there's a great clip where Chaucer, says something dramatic, and then there's this kind of breath as the audience doesn't react. And then Roland over there goes, yeah, rile them up. And the actual truth is that the audience didn't know they were supposed to react there because nobody knew what was being said. And so they used the actual footage from him riling everybody up by giving them that signal suddenly.
Oh,
stuff like that is really funny to me.
Yeah, they didn't speak English, so they didn't understand that was their cue to go, yay. Yeah. So they just stared at him. And then the other guy went, yay. And they went, yay. And it was hilarious. Probably the best scene in the movie.
I wouldn't go that far.
I would be curious to find out how much of that $65 million budget was spent on splintering wood.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was so good. I love some of the shots too, because you'd have stuff like during the scenes when he was just like smash after smash after smash, all they do is show them in the background with the wood splinters flying at them.
Yeah.
And one of those, Kate just catches a piece of a lance. I love stuff, little details like that. It was awesome. Made $56 million gross in the US, $117 million worldwide. It was considered at that point a commercial success, of course. So there you have A Knight's Tale, 19 years after the release, and I know that at least one of you probably had never watched this more than once previously. I know that at least one of you has watched this more than I have. So, who wants to begin?
I have a comment I want to make on the We Will Rock You before we get too far, just since that's at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I've actually done some digging on this because I've seen this movie a bunch of times. The reason that they picked the soundtrack that they did, which I'm not dogging on, I love the soundtrack.
Yeah.
The reason they picked the soundtrack they did and the reason they played the songs the way they did when they were showing crowds, they had really energizing music because that's the type of energy the crowd would have had, but we aren't able to accurately portray it now the way it would have been right. portrayed then.
Well, right.
So it's still trying to energize the crowd.
That's anachronism.
I super like that.
Yeah. That's an anachronism that, you know, that's exactly how, in my opinion, an anachronism should be used to convey the story to the modern eyeball, if you will.
Right. Yeah. And that goes into part of my whole point where I watched it before. I always just enjoyed it. And in reality, looking at it a little more critically, I realized that the whole thing is basically a big old Ren Faire fanboy.
Sure.
With
a zero to hero story in the middle. Right.
Just to give them, you know, it's got all those things. And you're right. That whole anachronism there, every time that you hit that montage, you know, yanks out of what is otherwise a very sensible, right in the zone thing. So if you're going to be one of those pedantic people that absolutely hates being broken out of that, you're not going to have a fun time watching this movie because it's going to drive you up the wall.
I wish I could have captured some good montage music, but frankly, they were all the boys are back in town and you know, it was all classic rock hits. It wasn't anything worth catching.
On the other hand, you say We Will Rock You, you know what the clip sounds like. So, and that's basically it. And we can describe the whole crowd chanting. And honestly, if you haven't seen the movie, unless you hate Heath Ledger, watch it. But
well, if you haven't seen the movie, don't listen to this show.
But I can now see after watching it more critically why other people would not enjoy it. But yeah, the story's great.
I liked Heath in this. I thought, he was still, he hadn't done much in his career at this point to distinguish him. And it reminded me a little bit of the way he played the character whose name escapes me now in 10 Things I Hate About You. I mean, there was a very kind of boyish quality the way he did everything, kind of reactionary. He felt a little too contemporary for the role, you know, but that was obviously what they wanted. They wanted a character that, even though he talked mostly with words that weren't necessarily out of character with the world that we are being introduced to, he was still doing it in a manner that felt more contemporary. He wasn't talking the way a person of that time would talk. He was talking with those words in a style more commensurate with the way we talk now,
true.
20 years ago, whatever.
I noticed that less because of the whole fish out of water theme to begin with, where he was above his station.
That's par for the course anyway. Most movies, that's an anachronism that we don't usually criticize. We watch movies that take place in a medieval period. We don't usually end up watching movies where they talk like Shakespeare. You know, right. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you do, and those movies are boring because of the dialogue. You know, we really want stories we can connect with. So, much like Shakespeare was doing when he introduced plays, reintroducing the manner in which dialogue and framing is provided to us for the story gives us accessibility and interest we otherwise wouldn't have had.
Uh-huh.
So there is that.
Then you go to the Romeo and Juliet thing where they went with Shakespeare dialogue and then wrote sword on the side of a gun.
Pieces.
And I could not stand watching that.
Dude, that was just an exploration of
how my friends loved it.
That's just an exploration of how Shakespeare is timeless. I'm not sure I really dig on that, but it's been explored in a lot of situations, a lot of movies and shows. And stuff.
I loved it so much.
That's fine. That's fine. Again, it's an artistic choice. The anachronism there is the way they talk. is the couplets.
Yeah, the anachronism on that is the fact that they talked like Shakespeare, even though they weren't in the Shakespeare time. So I have to put this out there. I loved the rock and roll.
Yeah.
I loved the language. I loved the way they presented this movie. In fact, if they had not wrapped this giant turd in that anachronism, it would have not been even remotely viewable.
Oh my gosh.
The anachronism is the only part of the movie I enjoyed.
It would have been a lot more boring of a movie, even from my point of view. It would have been a lot more boring of a movie without those little things to catch you in, draw you in, and excite you.
Oh, and Chaucer. Paul Bettany was
I did not like that character.
Oh, I loved him. Everything about him, every word that came out of his mouth was gold.
If you build a plot around this and took him out, I would have been fine.
He's damn near the only character in the movie.
If you would have built a plot in the movie to begin with,
he's the best character in the entire movie.
I'm allowed to be the dissenting voice on that one.
You absolutely. My last tweet today was, you know, there's things I enjoy that other people don't, and there are things that I don't enjoy that other people do, and we're not wrong, and that's my favorite thing about cinema.
That's there.
Exactly.
It's the thing.
Good call.
The acting was okay. I just did not like the character.
That's interesting.
That's kind of the same thing I say about all the characters.
I didn't like the writing. I had no real issue with the acting. What the actors did with what they had, I thought was fine.
I thought the story was great.
Oh, I couldn't disagree more.
I thought the story was not much, but was great.
Did
for
I
what
watch
it was.
The same movie as you guys?
I don't know. I would like to hear from Vanessa now because I can tell that she really wants to say something, and I'm happy to pass the stick.
Don't get me wrong. Most of the story I was okay with. The romance is actually where I caught a problem. The romance seemed super forced through the entire movie.
Okay, that was a weak spot. I grant that.
That was exactly kind of the point of it, too. You could tell is that it was almost like this is how we define romance in this kind of story, as like, oh, a guy sees a girl, a guy decides he's instantly in love with the girl. She plays hard to get. So he works all the harder at it. She pokes him with a stick every time he gets close. So he wants her all the more. I mean, there's some element here that doesn't really connect in a romantic way.
Exactly.
It was very witty.
And then she says, you have to lose in order to be loved by
so
me.
So much manipulation.
And then she says she has to
she's kind of
to
a horrible character.
It was yes. A very, 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 very unhealthy relationship. It was ugly. It was not...
Something we're mostly going to agree on? I did not like her. No,
she
the
was
one
not
character
a great
in the movie
person.
I did not like.
Interestingly enough.
I didn't like her at all. I didn't like their relationship.
Uh-oh.
I kept waiting for...
Did the kid like her?
The kid liked her?
No, what I was going to say is, interestingly enough, that is the one arc in this movie that apparently parallels eerily the historical record that exists of the real life Sir Liechtenstein.
Interesting.
Because
there's
he
a real
was,
life one?
Yes. Yes, there was.
Okay.
And we mostly know about him from his autobiographical poem.
Take us to freaking school, man. None of us knew this.
But there are other references to support his existence, if not the details of his autobiography. But apparently, according to himself, he was in fact obsessively in love with a noble woman who treated him absolutely horribly and refused to acknowledge his existence for years until he eventually, after one form of daring do or another, managed to get her attention and earn her love in return. And there's the story. Yay.
Yay.
There's actually a fascinating biopic on YouTube.
Did he ride a horse into a church?
No, he did worse things. Cut off his finger was one of them, as I recall.
Oh, Lord.
There's an interesting little biopic about it on YouTube that I saw. I believe it's on the channel Today I Learned. Might be worth checking out.
Then back to other things. So I get the whole zero to hero story. Yay, zero to hero. And I get the whole rising above your station. Yay.
Which you don't consider that a plot.
It's a plot if you do it even kind of realistically. They gave him a month to learn jousting.
Which he already knew some of.
All of the sudden becomes the best ever.
Because
so apparently
he is rudimentary.
He was a 20-some-odd-year-old prodigy.
Yeah.
And also, they didn't do any efforts to give him anything German at all, other than claiming that's where he's from, because that's what or Gelderlish.
Gelderland. Yeah. I loved that name. Gelderland.
Yeah.
You know, other than the fact that that's the easiest thing to forge, there's not a single noble out there that would have bought that for a second. He was obviously, blatantly
But then Edomar made a comment about these country knights, you know, which is in deference to the fact that there were a lot of barely landed gentry in the Middle Ages. And we're talking about an era that not only didn't have the internet, they didn't write anything down for four centuries. You know, nobody had any way of knowing one way or the other. People could act like any rough house dude down the line and still have a lineage to him.
Yeah, we call it the Dark Ages for a reason.
Yeah. I think that was oppression.
I gotcha.
It wasn't believable. It didn't for a second seem to fly. And then all of the sudden, he's the best of the best of the best.
Yeah, that's obviously the linchpin of the story that you have to check your brain at the door for. Because I could get the whole training thing because he'd been with Sir Ector since he was a kid.
His goal.
He'd been around, and even a target buddy for Sir Ector in the saddle, learning the ins and outs of jousting, watching him, learning everything he could, and then he's got a month to train or whatever. So you have to have some sort of natural talent. And I think the rest comes from because there's no other point in my mind to the scene where Adamar explains the whole thing about not raising his helmet and stuff to protect his eyes, things like that. The only point of that scene seems to be to suggest that William's technique is so rudimentary because he doesn't know what he's doing and doesn't know how it's done. And I like the suggestion in that because it is a core principle of my life experience that because he didn't know how it was done, he took it by the reins and did it his own way, which may not be the way it should be done, and accomplished more than people could have maybe accomplished in some of the circumstances or seen coming. That's like, I often joke that I never ran a convention before, a gaming convention. I never even attended a gaming convention before I ran my first gaming convention. Had to figure it all out on my own. Had a great convention. You know, it's you make stuff up on your own. You use intelligence, you use wit, you use the people around you as a source of wisdom and guidance, and you do the best you can. And he was just somebody with enough drive to do that. I can get that. But when it comes to the part you just mentioned where he then wins 18 billion tournaments in a row, tournament champion, the scene where Adamar is going through the stack at his battle camp, you know, Sir Ulrich, you know, it's like, oh my God, what are we suggesting here? But we had to get him to the world championships in order for the final battle with Adamar, who of course obviously earned the right to square off in the,
if you only could get to the world championships by winning every tournament, by the time the world championships were arrived after that run, he would have been the only contestant.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily mean he went to every tournament, I guess, either. But still,
well, maybe it's like that's baseball. Maybe there's like 100 tournaments.
Yeah, it's actually impossible. A lot of times there would be multiple tournaments happening in different parts of the country on the same day.
Yeah.
So,
and it just so happened that Bad Guy only got the results from the few tournaments he was at.
Well, that's the ones he wanted.
None of the others.
That's the ones he asked for, obviously. He wanted to see how Ulrich was doing.
Right, because some reason, he kind of got the better of him in the beginning.
Because of Jocelyn. That's the only reason.
Right. He put this target on good guy's back and just would not let go.
Because he dug the girl that he realized was digging William. Yeah, which... Yeah. Okay, so... The part I really did like was the way they developed the relationship between the principals amongst his retinue. I liked those characters. I liked Roland and Watt and Kate and Chaucer. I liked their repartee. I liked the way the bond built between them, which mostly was a bond between them and William. But you saw how it was characterized as the movie evolved, the story, what there was of a story about. I really do agree with you as far as the plot goes in terms of the construct of a plot, which is often called a plot line for a reason, requires that you have actual motion. You know, you start here, you are ending here, and these are the stages you go through to get there. This stage is here, it can be defined in one sentence. You know, this entire movie can be summed up in one or two sentences without really leaving hardly anything out. And to me, that says that, you know, plot was kind of the point. You know, this was a vehicle for an emotive construct. To me, that works because it was a fun one to hang out in. It was a fun crew to drive that road in with, and it was entertaining watching them deal with the challenges that were inherent in part of that. They weren't original challenges. They weren't unusual challenges, but they were challenges. And the dealing with what they did in London, I'd forgotten that the last 15 minutes of this movie was an emotional wrecking ball. My God. You know, and I watched it this morning, and I'm sitting here with my wife sleeping over on the bed, and I'm sitting here going... not making noise. Yeah, I just, you know, this is we're just over here doing our own thing, stay asleep. And it got me. And it was all about the acting at that point. It was all about the acting, the music, and the direction. And the director, by the way, fantastic. I love the visual breakdown in this movie. I love the setups. I love the moving shots. I mean, not just the action sequences of the horse. He was good at that stuff. I mean, some of the choices they made in the fallout were really awesome. Some of the sweeps they would do after a run were really awesome. But a lot of there were choices I didn't like. And almost all of them, by the way, interestingly enough, had to do with William and Jocelyn. Almost all the shots that I looked at and went, I really wish the director had put a second assistant director on this. Or maybe he did. Maybe that was the problem. But you,
William and his father. I loved that sequence.
That was great. That was great.
Yeah.
The guy they got to play John Thatcher, obviously they hired because he was good at looking at a camera and emoting. I mean, my God, the last couple times you see him, that's all he does is he looks into the distance and gets misty eyed.
He's one of the characters I liked.
Because he's blind.
And because he's full of emotion.
Your father heard that.
Real quick, though, since I missed a couple of things there that I've already forgotten, but the one that I didn't forget, you mentioned the scene where he first sees her and falls in love with her at first sight. I really have to ask how that was supposed to be believable considering the costume, and I use that term advisedly, that they put her in for that scene. She
looked like a chess bishop.
Oh, dear God.
It, yeah.
All the costumes.
Yeah, it was... I mean, there's terrible, and then you drop down a few levels and you get to this. I don't see how anyone could have looked at what she was wearing and gone, that's the most beautiful woman in the world.
Her costumes through the entire movie were like that.
Yeah.
Now, some of them were bad, and then some of them were worse, and then there was this one, the one that she started in. I just, no.
And none of them were period specific at all.
They wouldn't have even looked
good in 2001 when this came out.
I did like the feathery hair she had in a few of those scenes. That was, I'll go ahead and get behind that one. I liked that.
And again, I could bitch about the costumes and the anachronisms and the fact that this isn't period. But it's not the fact that it wasn't period that bothers me.
It didn't fit the rest of the movie.
The rest of the movie didn't fit the rest of the movie. There were a few clever things. There were a few clever lines. And the action shots were great action shots, as long as you don't watch too closely, because there's a whole lot of jump cuts and edits and weird things that happen and people that move and magically reappear and show up. If I paused this and went very slowly, I would wager that the goof list would be well into double digits, if not triple.
I believe that.
I literally stopped counting the number of scenes in the jousts where they would do the pullback shot and you'd see the guy coming up on the horse and his lance is pretty much pointing at the audience and then right. It shifts to a close up and it's actually going straight forward.
Right.
Where it's supposed to be.
My favorite one, the one that I noticed more than just about anything else and kind of got me to thinking back to some of the others earlier, was the very last climactic Chaucer speech.
Yes.
He's standing on the prince's throne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First off, you don't stand on the prince's throne while the prince is in it. The guard probably would have killed him.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you're dead before you get there.
Not the point.
Even though the prince kind of dug him, still. But in the middle of the speech, they cut to a side shot where you can't even see Chaucer, but you're looking at the prince watching Chaucer at a distance with his arm on the chair, and then you cut back, and Chaucer is standing on the arm of the chair.
Right.
Practically on the guy's head.
From a distance.
Makes you feel like they did that close-up shot later and got it wrong, you know?
Yeah, it's just like...
It makes me feel like they weren't paying attention.
So when you talk about how amazing the direction is and how they did these amazing director's choices and stuff...
Mm-hmm. I absolutely stand behind that. I was talking about the shots. I wasn't talking about the editing.
Okay,
I did not feel that the movie was edited well, and I don't think the director did the editing himself because he was too good at setting up the shots to have them ruined the way a lot of them were. I could be wrong, but he wrote the film and he directed it.
Weird.
And I felt like he was the reason that, again, that he had a vision. He had a real strong vision. Often when a director directs the film that they are writing, they have a very strong vision about what they're trying to accomplish. And I think that paid out. I thought that played out very nicely. But yeah, there were a lot of just really questionable edits. And again, Even then, with the shots, I can't say that's all of it either.
Oh, can somebody explain to me bad guy floating in midair and everybody coming and hovering over him?
I was so hoping someone would bring that
up. And
then
they go back and he's in on the horse again?
I think it was supposed to be a mental thing that was going through his head while it was going on, yeah.
Now, it obviously wasn't real because, you know, they didn't have time to pop in above him while he was falling through midair without his helmet suddenly. No,
which he never lost.
It was completely abstraction. And the reason it was done in midair like that is because he was literally flying off his horse at the time. It was jarring the way they shot it, but it was captured the imagination because it didn't look real. And I think that was the point.
And that you have been weighed, you have been measured, and you have been found wanting. I love that line every time they use it.
I really liked it the first time.
The first time.
The second time seemed
a little forced.
And then the last time was awesome.
Although I did like William's last, his line in that. When they did that, then you've definitely been found wanting. And he possibly says, welcome to the new world. And he just does that boyish grin that he does so well. And that was cute because he was just in reference to, in what world could you have ever beat me? You know, but it was so disconnected that you had to think about it to understand why.
But he definitely got back what he threw out, so.
But it wasn't the denouement, unfortunately. In fact, when I was doing clips, I didn't bother catching that because I thought it wasn't really good. You know, it's important because of where it falls in terms of his resolution of the story, that kind of callback to what Adamar said to him and all that, but it wasn't good.
Adamar's such an asshole. Through the entire
I liked
movie.
Him as a villain. I liked him as a...
Oh, no, he's a great villain. He's an asshole.
He was so evil. He was so smarmy and nasty. I think the word I used in my tweet was cartoonish.
Yes, good word. And I think that one of the things that made it interesting to me was the way the actor brought a lot of the pain that he was feeling in this situation because he kept having things go wrong for him. And like at the dance, when he realizes that his, why don't you show us the dance, the Gelderland thing backfired, you know, things like that. And then he marches, you know, he stalks out of the place. Little things go wrong for him. And, you know, you're supposed to see the gears turning in his head. And I think he did that pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not over anything important, but he did it well.
Next time, Gadget.
Yeah.
Next time.
if he had just said it out loud, it would have been better, you know.
I kept waiting for Muttley to pop out. I really did.
Here's the interesting thing about that. Despite all the cheese that comes from the anachronisms and the modern voicing, they weren't trying to make a corny movie. There was a definite sort of serious vibe at the core of the story.
That's right. It's called Maze now.
There's a definite serious vibe at the core of the story that they were trying to maintain. They didn't always do it very well. And to me, it broke down in a lot of ways because the things you were supposed to care about were kind of hard to care about. The things that I did care about were the things you were supposed to kind of care about. So the story didn't work on all cylinders, it fired on all cylinders, but it did have a core to it that I felt wasn't intended to be silly. And that's what I think a lot of people have trouble getting through the anachronisms for, because they take a lot of the weight out of the story, you know, but without like you said, it wouldn't actually be anywhere near as enjoyable. I don't know whether I agree that it would be a complete turd, but it wouldn't necessarily be as enjoyable. What made the movie fun was how the story was told more than anything.
Have we touched on to Chaucer's character yet?
Not intentionally.
Other than the fact that he was the best part of the movie. No.
Or the fact that he could be gone and I'd be happy.
Fact that he was the worst part of the movie.
The fact that he was Geoffrey Chaucer, which was not lost on me the very first time I saw the movie. And I loved... And
that annoyed me right from the get-go.
All the illusions that came with that. And when he saw the guys in the market, and the partner and the summoner, Simon the Summer and Peter the partner, and you go, yeah, I will eviscerate you in fiction.
These are direct references to his work.
They're in the Canterbury Tales. You certainly do eviscerate them in fiction. It's all tongue-in-cheek. And I just thought that was brilliantly meta in what it was. But the character was fun, and that's really all that kind of mattered.
Maybe that's the part I didn't like about it.
That I will eviscerate you in fiction, that entire line, love it completely.
Even the name of the movie, the very first chapter of the Canterbury Tales is called The Knight's Tale. But if you never read Chaucer, you didn't have any kind of connection to the character, then he wouldn't necessarily, you know, none of that would be interesting at all or matter at all. It's like all the stuff thrown in there that makes no difference.
Or if you have read Chaucer and really liked Chaucer, you probably get upset by the fact that he is portrayed as the way he's portrayed.
He did get kicked out of a town, and then as a a main form of acting against it, wrote stories about the people he didn't like in the town he was kicked out of. So it's not completely off.
Yeah, there's some reality to the Chaucer character in there. But like with everything, extraordinary liberty state, which was the point. You know, I mean, this was the point, was taking a character that people kind of knew something about and just doing something way off base with him. Yeah, making him part of this story.
That meta part wasn't what I cared for.
I'm sorry.
It's what it is.
He was fun because he had all the best dialogue. He had the best words in the movie.
He did have some great dialogue.
And he was also one of the only people that even came close. He was the one guy at the Ren Fair that was trying to do a little old English.
who sounded like he belonged at the Ren Fair.
While everybody else was shipped in from the Bronx.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I have a ton of clips. If you guys start to get tired of them, we'll kind of roll out, but I'm sure they'll create some conversation.
Maybe a little bit here.
This is where I started because it seemed like the place to start.
The spark of his life is smothered in shite. His spirit is gone, but his stench remains. Does that answer your question?
No. He sleeps rousing. We're minutes from victory. I haven't eaten in 3 days. None of us have. What?
We need to fetch a priest.
No, he's not dead!
And then starts rattling his cage and trying to get his attention. I love the fact that Sir Ector actually had a role later in the film because, like, his only role in this scene was to sit there dead in his armor.
Oh, that reminded me. Who was that actor? Did anyone know?
Who played Sir Ector?
Yeah, because I definitely recognized him, but I don't know where from.
I can definitely tell you I recognize the guy, but I couldn't tell you who it is. Nick Brimble is who's listed in IMDb.
Yeah.
I don't know him by name.
I don't know the names. That means anything to me.
He was Little John in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Was he really?
Oh. Wow.
Dude, that was him. Oh my God, I liked him as Little John so much more.
And unlike some Robin Hoods, I speak with an English accent.
Right. Well, he was a Little John. That's funny. That's pretty good. That was a really cute setup, though. I mean, obviously, the core story here is one of deceiving other people so that you can pretend to be something you're not, which is celebrated in this story, which I think is great.
Oh, yeah.
Subversion at its best.
I kind of liked the tip of the hat to Monty Python there.
No, he's dead. No, he's not.
Dead. Joined the choir invisible.
No, he's not.
We will rock you.
A big noise playing in the street. Gonna be a big mess someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place. Singing, we will rock you.
Not sound like guitars.
Yeah.
That's not how trumpets work.
I actually only included that because you can hear the crowd noises with it, so it really kind of paints the picture. And because
they were doing the whole stomp together as a beat.
An actual excuse to play 30 seconds of Freddie Mercury.
Which, if you watch the cut, there's another one of the things I noticed because I watch stuff like this, is there was a lady who had her hands up, and she was kind of watching around, and she would look at the person next to her, and she'd go, clap, clap, and then when they go, boom, boom. Everybody in the crowd goes, boom, boom. She goes, and then she goes, clap, clap. Clap, clap. Everybody else is going, boom, boom, clap. Boom, boom, clap. And she's like, clap. Clap. It was funny.
I also like this related clip.
He needs 3 points to beat you, so a broken lance won't win it for him. He has to knock you off the horse.
I never had a score, Roland. I've waited my whole life for this moment.
You've waited your whole life for Selector to shot himself to death.
And I did appreciate the fact that they were able to sneak in exposition and then write it off as, why are you telling me this?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's fun.
And then they do it again with a mansplaining smarmy villain.
Oh, my gosh. You mean when he explains to us how jousting works?
Oh, I couldn't possibly. I don't understand all the rules.
Right.
Because I'm a girl, and she knows the rules, and you know she knows the rules.
Or doesn't
and
care.
And that's when she starts coming off as manipulative, and it's annoying.
Yeah, this movie
I didn't
would have gotten
to be discussing
an extra
Jocelyn
star
hate.
If he had dumped her in a river somewhere and married the blacksmith.
Yes! Yes, yes.
I would have given an entire additional star to my rating for this movie had it happened that way.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Yeah,
that's true.
And I have to admit,
that would have been worth an extra star.
I have to admit, despite the fact that that wouldn't have been any help for Kate's character, because that would not necessarily have been appropriate, I think it would have been good. It would definitely have been good.
Or at least try. Now, okay, it would have gotten two extra stars if he had tried that and, like, kissed her and said, you know what, I should have realized you were right in front of me this whole time. And he kisses her, and she decks him and says, what the F are you doing? And walks
Smack
away.
Smack him over the head with a horseshoe.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You guys are so mean.
You know, trotting? To trudge the slow, weary, depressing yet determined walk of a man who has nothing left in his life except the impulse to simply soldier on.
Oh, were you robbed?
Interesting question, actually. Yes, and then at the same time, a huge, resounding no. It's more a sort of involuntary vow of poverty.
Introduction.
That's a way to describe gambling.
Yeah.
Addiction.
That's a...
vow of poverty.
Another little hurdle they chose, because they were talking, they definitely took a pot shot at social injustice in this, class warfare, things like that. But taking a pot shot at gambling addiction was kind of an interesting choice. But by making it more than just a passing mention. Yeah.
It also does have a callback later, because in a little bit further in the speech, he talks about pride and how trudging is a man's pride and the one thing that he has no matter what. And then when we go to one of the end scenes and he's like, my pride is all I have left. And they
damn your pride, William.
And they can't take it from me. And they go, they can and they will.
And he kind of knew. Yeah.
But that whole, you know, the pride has balance on the scales there.
That's a good callback.
We're introduced to the pride here and we get it there. So
I wouldn't have caught that.
I'm adding you to my thumbs up list, just so you know.
Me?
Yeah.
Singing night.
Walking out from Cheapside, my fortunes for to seek. I passed along the River Thames, its waters did they reek. 'Twas there I met a pretty lass, she said her name was Nell.
You having a fit over there, Jay?
Just real quick, I gotta throw this out there. We've had those moments, I think we've talked about them once or twice, where, you know, we're talking about a movie where there's some singing involved and we're like, did you know this actor could sing? I had no idea this good actor could sing. I'd like to say this is the opposite of that. This is where did you have any idea Heath Ledger could not sing to save his life? Hey.
And that's the thing that immediately endeared me to him and continued on for the rest of his career.
Mario coin at 4706.
He's supposed to be a noble.
I thought it was endearing.
He's supposed to be a noble. This goes back into the whole, how does anybody buy this? He goes through the cruddy parts of town, starts singing a local English folk song that no German Gerland noble would have ever Gelderland. Heard.
Everybody look up Gelderland. Was that a real place?
It's just... Sorry.
To me, it sounded made up anyway.
I think it was supposed to sound made up.
It's real.
Oh, my gosh.
And where was was Gelderland German?
Gelderland is part of the Netherlands.
Dutch province.
Ah, so he was supposed to be
close-ish.
Dutch.
Yeah.
He looks kind of Dutch. I mean, I could buy it.
He's blonde. Nerd it down.
I wouldn't kick him out of bed for genealogy.
So he was supposed to be a Netherlands country noble with a German name.
Speaking of kicking people out of bed.
Does this not shock you, ladies?
I did like that.
Certainly, my lord. I only laugh just to keep from weeping.
Beauty is such a curse. Pray your years come swiftly. Pray your beauty fades that you may better serve God.
Oh, and I do, my lord. I pray for it all the time. Why, God, did you curse me with this face?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she's a bit of a biznitch that early.
Yeah, the feminist themes are strong in the movie. It's just unfortunate that so many of them are fought for by that.
And to be fair, again, I don't necessarily know that the, I mean, I think she did the words on the page justice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, her acting was phenomenal.
And I loved Kate. I loved Kate. She was also good. I liked the way they portrayed her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she had a more worldly kind of quality to her. Her husband had died, you know, I mean, she had more of a story that kind of programmed her character a little bit. It came off well. I mean, she felt very natural in her element, wherever she fit in the story. So, Garden of His Turbulence.
Yes! Behold, my Lord Ulrich, the rock, the hard place.
Oh, yeah.
Like a wind from Geldland, he sweeps by, blown far from his homeland in search of glory and honor. We walk in the Garden of His Turbulence. Yeah!
And I want to bookmark the scene real quick to come back to later during my extra. Just throwing that out there.
All right. No worries. Had to catch it. A lot of this stuff felt like had to catch it stuff, you know? Or they like the first, like this one's our introduction to Count Adhemar.
What do you think of the joust?
It's very abrupt. And I'm afraid I don't understand the rules.
Then I shall educate you. A match. It's three lances. 1 point is awarded for breaking a lance on a man between the waist and neck. 2 points for breaking on the helmet. It's difficult. The helmet sweeps back. Most blows glance off, leaving the lance unbroken. And 3 points for bearing a rider to the ground.
And you often get his horse. I didn't get any of that part of that. Which I recognize was just a way of trying to explain to the audience how the joust was supposed to work so you could follow it the rest of the movie. But he came off as a dick pretty quick.
She didn't know that. Yeah.
I didn't even stop to think about that. I feel kind of bad. Do you guys mention it? I didn't even stop to think. I wonder if Jocelyn knew anything about jousting and was just saying that.
I didn't get the impression this was her first rodeo.
Didn't really care.
No, it's jousting, not rodeo.
Different horse sport.
Oh, I hate rodeos.
It's sixes and sevens tonight, Chaucer. Do you feel lucky?
Do you wear enough clothes?
Go on, be gone. I'm done with you.
Except to exact my revenge.
What on earth could you possibly do to us?
I will eviscerate you in fiction. Every last pimple, every last character flaw. I was naked for a day. You will be naked for eternity.
I do like that line.
I do too, but that's mostly because I'm familiar with Canterbury Tales.
But we already talked about that, so yeah. Anytime you guys want me to stop, just let me know. I got a lot of stuff, so I can just keep on rolling. Dance lessons.
And one, and two, and three, and four. And your hands shoot the light like a birdie on a branch. And one, two, and three, and four. And what doesn't lead, he follows like a girl.
One, two, and twirly, twirly, twirly.
I liked that cut after he punches him and then he goes to him with the things in his nose.
Yeah, Chaucer and Watts are probably the best two characters in the movie, and the way that they play off of each other is amazing.
Watt has some good lines.
That interaction was good.
His hot-headedness makes him fun. Yes. Of course, I had to capture this.
You can't eat a flower. A flower doesn't keep you warm.
And a rose never knocked a man off a horse either, did it?
You're just a silly girl, aren't you?
Better a silly girl with a flower than a silly boy with a horse and a stick.
Wait for it.
It's called a lance. Hello?
Yeah.
The single most often quoted line.
Exactly. I felt like I had to catch it because it's the one people say. So, see, the letter. This was a tough one. Trying to decide whether I want to pull any clips from it because the whole thing was too long and there was no point.
It's horrible.
Kind of picked a spot, and I liked, probably of all of them, I liked Watt's kind of contribution in here. Again, a lot of it has to do with Alan Tudyk's delivery with the character. But
well, she broke my heart. But I used to say that
the pieces of my broken heart are so small that they can be passed through the eye of a needle. He writes as though I had died.
Yes, madam. stars as well. She used to cook for the Duke of York. I miss her like the sun misses the flower.
I miss you like the sun misses the flower. Like the sun misses the flower in the depths of winter.
Just a little piece of it. The letter was a cool construction of a scene. I liked the idea behind it. I don't know if the execution was great, but some of the words were good too. I mean,
it was a neat way to give depth to a lot of characters that didn't really have a lot of depth, in my opinion.
So out of nowhere, for no discernible reason, all of them had experienced heartbreak that had bestowed upon them poetry.
They all look like they're in their 20s, if not 30s. Had you experienced heartbreak by then? I'm sure everyone has.
Not necessarily that had exposed me to, that had given me the lines like, you know, the needle in a million pieces and I missed her like flowers missed the sun.
Oh, I wrote a lot of poetry in my 20s.
Awesome. But there's a very good chance that several of them couldn't even read.
But you're cynical enough to think that it's unrealistic that the four of them could have had, the three of them, because Chaucer obviously could have had experiences that gave them, that inspired them.
And Chaucer had said, hey, I'm a writer, let me do this. And
right.
he made this awesome letter and it was, Cyrano-like.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have been great, but taking that one or two key lines from each of them just felt forced to me.
I can see that.
I like the way they handled it. I don't see a problem with it. I mean, in terms of the realism, sure. Yeah, I there's nothing in the movie I watch for realism.
That's a good point.
So, I caught this just because I thought it was funny.
Cock-a-doodle once, I shall not deny him. Cock-a-doodle twice, I shall not deny him. Cock-a-doodle thrice, I deny him.
I don't know why. It's so nothing.
And it bothers me because he didn't deny him the first two times. He did deny him three times. It wasn't two deny. It was two not
right.
denials, and then the third time you do deny. It was deny, deny, deny.
Yep.
Reference my previous comments about having an expert to handle the material.
Yeah.
Gunderland.
He's blunt. He's pissed. He'll see you in the list. Lichtenstein. Lichtenstein. He's blunt. He's had. He comes from Gelderland. He comes from Gelderland. 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 Gelderland.
Well, I realized I had that blaring for a minute there. Sorry, guys.
That one also could have gotten them in trouble because they made a bet that an Englishman would win.
In a French bar.
That was the point. Yeah.
But he was from Gelderland. He wasn't supposed to be English.
God. You're not wrong.
I'm going to win this tournament for you.
Excuse me.
What, this tournament? I'll win it in your name. Every knight I defeat for you. Your beauty will be reflected in the power of my arm, the flanks of my horse.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
Really? It's flanks.
Yes.
Talk about Cyrano, right? The part where he comes to see her in person, she's all like, give me poetry. Give me poetry now, bitch. He's like, I don't want it.
And then, completely out of character, because he has been totally not misogynistic. He's been the good example this whole time. And then all of a sudden he's like, men's schedules are busier. What?
Yep.
Blasphemous? Oh.
And your love. Have you proven that yet?
Oh. I thought that sound effect was really good.
Boy. Fear, the passion.
That was a really good sound.
That's what she makes me feel. And for that, I say my rosary to Joslyn and no one else.
William, that's blasphemous.
I just had to leave the whole thing in there. I just loved the sound effect.
And it was a very sickening yet satisfying crunch.
Let's see. I have some Adamar being a dick. I think I'll skip some of that. I don't know. Here's Fogging in Earnest, I called it.
Go! Speak fast!
With the crowd at the stocks.
Or I will fog you! As Jesus crossed the Nazarene, and his most holy mother, the Virgin Mary, are my witnesses, I will fog you! With the best I'm dying! Stigmatizing! Pain! Loss of pain!
He keeps using that word. I do not think it means what he thinks it means.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
In fact, I don't know if it means anything. Is there fong anywhere? Does that exist?
I don't think so. Anybody want to look it up?
I looked it up in the dictionary, and it said no entries found.
Right.
So I don't know if it's like an ancient thing, or if it's just an Alan Tudyk thing. You need to try looking it up
in an old English dictionary.
A narrow strip of leather or other material, especially used for fastening or lash of a whip. So essentially, the fong was to whip them.
That's a thong.
Fong. F-O-N-G. Fong.
He's looking it up.
Huh.
It's a Middle English word.
Ah.
They got something from Middle English. Accept it.
Fair enough.
Wow.
We'll give them that point of credit.
I will.
Yep, I was able to find it too.
I will take that back.
All right. I only got a couple left. I caught the big moment, the one that mattered, I mean. So it's kind of a long clip, but we're almost done.
Please, I pray you, hear it now. For I would lay rest the grace in my tongue and speak plain. Days like these are far too rare to cheapen with heavy-handed words. And so, I'm afraid, without any ado whatsoever, excuse me, my lord, here he is, one of your own, born a stone's throw from this very stadium, and here before you now, the son of John Thatcher. That's your name, Will. Sir William Thatcher. Your father heard that.
That was truly where the last thing that mattered in the movie was that sequence right there.
I was crying.
That was one of several genuinely touching scenes in the last bit of this movie.
Yeah.
I didn't give two hoots about him getting the girl, but that scene.
Maybe that's part of the reason I feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about it. I guess I had, Well, that's just because they were being cute.
I'm going to have to write some of this story down.
The part about the prince in the night?
No. All of it. All human activity lies within the artist's scope. Maybe not yours.
Just because it was silly. So, that's all I got. You guys had enough?
Yay.
Are we done talking about this apparent travesty?
I think we've said all there is to be said, except our thumbs up and thumbs down.
I still love
pretty
this
sure
movie.
My opinion's going to be vastly different than everyone else's.
Still love this movie.
Not everyone else's.
Fair enough. Yeah.
There's at least two of you.
Richard, thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right. So my thumbs up, honestly, it is the story. I see it there underneath all the tropes and the lines. There is an actual plot with motives, challenges, and twists, and I enjoyed that. On my thumbs down, it's still in those montages because while it's driving and exciting to the viewer, they do take away from what is otherwise what I feel is a solidly themed experience. I have heard disagreements today, though.
Weren't there like 17 montages in this movie, too? It was
pretty
ridiculous.
Much, and all of them with their own song. But losing them wouldn't help the movie. I did find them somewhat distracting from my point of view. I ended up giving it 3.5 stars. It's good. If you enjoy Renaissance fairs and the stories told in the period that we tell in the modern day, then you'll enjoy the base of it. If you can't deal with the inaccuracies of the montages and the other things we pointed out today, then you will get annoyed at those and you will not enjoy the experience at all.
I'm going to remind you what my D&D games are usually like. Through no fault of my own. Oh, sorry, Vanessa.
Okay. Just making sure we're over there. Thumbs up, Paul Bettany, Chaucer. Loved the character through everything. Loved the references. The anachronisms in the movie were great. I super enjoyed them. The actual tale of the knight was great. Thumbs down, romance. It sucked.
And there you have it, a woman's perspective.
The actual romance of the movie was forced and drawn out and just not enjoyable in the least. Overall rating was still a 4.5 because I love this movie and I would recommend it to anybody.
How many times a year do you watch that again?
At least a couple.
Purposefully.
Purposefully. Yeah. I choose to.
All right, Jason?
Thumbs up. The anachronisms. I loved the anachronisms.
We didn't talk about the dance scene, for example. Oh, golden years.
That's all right there.
The anachronisms were one of the only things that got through it. It was glittery, shiny wrapping paper on a box full of shite.
I thought he was going to say a box full of thumbs down.
Does that even include the Nike product placement on a movie that didn't have a single tennis shoe in it?
The swoosh.
Oh, well met, sir.
Yeah, it was kind of like...
It was cute. That's
really?
All. Just cute.
And then thumbs down was exact opposite of Richard's. I do not see the story. I still do not see the story. Even after discussing it, I don't... Words fail. And, yeah, and the only way I would ever use this number in conjunction with this movie is based on the fact that it is now low instead of high. I give this movie the number one it deserves.
Oh.
Ooh.
Heavy hit.
Oh, I did not expect that.
You dislike awful. This more than oof. Anything I, else I, we have I watched. Would,
I, oh, pains, pains to watch.
To say I don't understand you, sir, is an understatement. But that's why we're here to discuss it.
Still don't understand you.
The kid.
So we have a movie that Vanessa has given 4.5 stars. Jason has given 1. I am just, wow. You said this movie was divisive, but I didn't realize.
you got my 5 stars in that markup there, Rich, that you're working on?
Yes. And are you doing some math?
For thumbs up. So a little bit. I'm going to draw this out just a little bit. I'm sorry. One of the things that I struggled with is that the characters were so exaggerated. I mean, very two-dimensionally so in most cases for most of the movie. But there were scenes, and it was those scenes where they were kind of, you know, chumming it up and being themselves, where those characteristics were not so forced, not so obvious. And those are the scenes in the movie that I actually really enjoyed. And some of them, you know, the really emotional ones, some of the characters, like his father, the closest I would be able to say amongst the main characters would have to be Kate. I really enjoyed her character, and there were only a few points where I felt like she had that exaggerated cartoonishness to her. I liked her. But mostly bit characters and small scenes where this kind of felt more natural, I liked. And then the rest of it, I really didn't. So my thumbs up goes to those scenes, especially the feel-good scenes and moments. I really enjoyed those, and those did what redemption it was possible to do for this movie for me. I was enjoying myself.
Does that include stuff like when Prince Edward bent down as like, you know...
Oh, thank you. Prince Edward, yes. I absolutely... have to say he was my favorite character in this film.
Yeah.
Prince Edward.
I can see it. He was understated, but he was good.
Yes, and that understatement compared to the exaggerated quality I was talking about is exactly why he was my favorite character, because he felt like the most connectable out of all of them. I just really had a huge fondness for the character. I know I probably wouldn't be able to pick the actor out of a lineup if my life depended on it.
He's done some other stuff I really enjoy.
But he brought something to this character that, and this movie, that I felt it desperately needed. And yes, so.
I really didn't catch it, but I really loved when he leaned down to William at the Stocks. Yes. You know, and is like, What would it say? It said, what a pair we two make, you know, both pretending to be something that we're not.
And failing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says, your men love you. If I knew nothing more, you know.
That would be enough.
I loved the way his character came off in every exchange. Yes. And the fact that the root of him, the core of him, was simple, but still important to the way the role he played in the story.
And to me, the knighting of Sir William right there in front of the stocks.
Yes.
Was absolutely the climax of the movie.
Yeah.
And I still struggled with it because, again, we have that kind of whiplash and that exaggerated thing. The crowd that was sitting there throwing throwing vegetables at him.
It's 1:11:36.
And now cheering for him. And just that turnaround, there's, you know, if you're paying attention to the crowd during that scene, it's like someone has a switch and is controlling them, you know, flip the switch, they're booing, turn the switch off, they're neutral, throw the switch
and
up,
they're
cheering.
And it wasn't that long ago that he was their favorite
right.
person.
He was
in
their
the
hero.
World.
Exactly. So yeah, that all of that, that's my thumbs up. My thumbs down. Oof. My thumbs down is the cringe. Oh my God, the cringe. This movie had
people.
So much cringe. The scene that I bookmarked earlier, and then we went to the scene where in the cathedral where he comes up to talk to her after she got the letter, and those were the worst, but there were so many smaller scenes of cringe. I spent half this movie embarrassed for the people on the screen.
That was one of the scenes I liked the least in the shots too. That whole thing where he goes through in the church, the entire scene they decided to shoot from a wide profile view. So as she walks forward in the church, he follows and the camera kind of follows, and they're like little on the screen. They're like, it's like why? I mean, it's like looking at a diorama of the church or something. Like we couldn't fit
the
camera through the window.
Otherwise drab world.
I didn't care about the dialogue at that point anyway.
I had
the shots weren't good.
I had failed to watch this movie 3 times this week when I was planning to. Ended up having to watch it literally last minute. In fact, I think we had to push back our podcast specifically so I got time to finish watching the movie.
Yeah, that's good.
And even then, I started the movie with 2 hours and 5 minutes left until showtime, and it's a 2-hour and 12-minute movie, so I had to cut some bits as I was watching the movie, and fortunately, the movie came loaded with so much cringe that I was able to easily skip the time I needed and still have time to step into the bathroom before we started the show. It
Yikes.
Was just cringy, and I hated that. And it very strongly devalued the movie for me. And I will point out that I noticed it the first time I watched the movie, but having watched it again, it was so much worse. And I deeply fear if I ever have to watch the movie a third time, the cringe will kill me. So
6 months, are you game?
My final
Vanessa has an appointment in her calendar, so.
For this movie would have been 2.5 stars. I'm ducking half a star for the cringe. 2 stars.
Oh, wow. Oh. Okay, where does that put us, Rich?
She decided. So, ouch. 3.5, 4.5, 1, 5, and 2 averages to 3.2. That does round down to three stars.
Nicely done, guys.
Which is a good movie, just not recommended.
We literally, the five of us, rated this movie 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
All right. Well, there we go.
Actually, yeah, we did.
Episode 6 of Exposition Street. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week's movie, we have Alice in Wonderland. The Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland coming up next.
Oh,
so you guys ready for
fun.
That?
Oh,
we got Starship Troopers on the docket after that, so plan your viewing accordingly.
Got a couple weeks going here.
I'll have to leave some extra time for that one.
You need more time?
I think we need to flip it. I was reading a thing that Starship Troopers was coming off Netflix.
Oh, good call. Okay, we'll flip them.
Flip them.
Consider them flipped, and I will resume the extra music.
Starship Troopers it is.
All right, so Starship Troopers next week.
Reserve extra time for that.
Thank you very much for Jason, for the kid, for Richard, and Vanessa. We're out of here.
Hola.